So Bradley, what's up?
Been a busy month since you and I last talked on previous show.
I'm pretty sure did we not end the podcast?
I thought we did.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you just have these habits that you do for years, and you just think, like, you know, Wednesdays. You know, some Wednesdays I just show up on Skype and wait around, and no one shows up. I mean, have you read the book Ready Player One?
No.
Okay, so I have this like theory that Ready Player One, when that book came out, I'm like 3/4 of the way through it. Like, Facebook saw that, or Mark Zuckerberg saw this book and thought, like, that's the world I want to build. And I just, like, see that world, and I'm excited and sad for that world, and I just can't tell which person he thinks Facebook is or which company he thinks Facebook is. And so, you know, we just have these virtual hangouts. Like, Skype on Wednesdays or Thursdays is, like, our virtual hangout. And I showed up one day, and you were there, so I thought, let's talk.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, this Apple event is largely, like, dominated some of my life since it happened. Not because I was there, but because it's like, I don't know, when you like have a birthday, and I hesitate to even say Christmas, because Christmas is like certainly not about the presents. Mm-hmm. It is like way more than about the presents for my family. But it's almost like, so if you just sit, like, look at the presents part of Christmas, and you're really, really excited about it, and Christmas was great, but like you didn't get anything you asked for. And I feel like that's what this event was like. So, I was there, and I got it. So the invite was you and I both got invites for you. It's obviously like a really, really long plane ride and very, very expensive plane ride.
And a short time to think about it as well. I mean, it was like 8 or 9 days or something between the invitation and the event.
Well, and gosh, like, had you had come, I mean, other than us getting to hang out, like, how disappointed would you have been? I mean, that would have cost you, what, like £2,000?
£2,000,
and again, like, plus. And you're, like, paying for this, like, out of pocket. And so, for me, it was, like, a really short plane ride. And it was 2 hours, really going, it's an hour, and it's coming back, it's 3 hours, because time zones. So, I got an invite, and so most of you know, since our show ended, I've been riding over at 9to5 Mac on, like, school stuff, and really been excited about that opportunity, and that's been a lot of fun. And so, that's how I got an invite. You got an invite because you're Fraser Spears, and you are who you are. Like, you are a brand amongst yourself. And so, my invite actually came to my 9to5 Mac email. So, I went, and, you know, get in the night before, and we go to dinner with some of the guys from 9to5 Mac who were also there. I was the only one with an invitation. And so, you get there, and I've never been to Chicago, but gosh, it was really, really cold. You know, they call it the Windy City, and I totally get it. And it is traffic-y. I mean, like, I get there the night before, and I'm thinking, all right, I got to... You know, it's like 10 miles from the airport, my hotel. Well, that's 45 minutes at 5 o'clock Chicago time.
Yeah.
And it took me forever to get there. I mean, it took me half the time in an Uber or a Lyft to get from the airport to my hotel than it did to actually get there, like in a plane. And,
The road from the airport in Chicago is terrible. I've been to Chicago 3 or 4 times, and I've loved every visit, but getting to and from the airport is not fun.
Well, like, my head, it was, like, more closer to, like, Chattanooga than it is New York, but it's, like, way more like New York than it is Chattanooga. Yeah. I don't know why I thought that, but, yeah. So, really cold the day of. So, I get there early. Long line to get in. Now, this school that it's at is, like, Lane Tech, and the only way I can describe it is, like, if you went to Hogwarts, and that's what it was. And it's really, really nice. It's really, really unique architecture. Like, you can tell it's, like, an old building, and it's just, it's outstanding. And line up, and it's drizzly rain, and it's cold. But Apple employees are handing out umbrellas, and they are so happy to see us. And it's a mix of media and teachers and so on. And they're like, you're handing out umbrellas, and they have these like those big heaters that you can get from like your hardware store, like the really tall ones. Mm-hmm. They look like really big umbrellas. They have those everywhere. And one of the neat things about the Apple employees is they're all wearing green sweatshirts with a gold Apple logo. Well, found out later that's the school's color. Like, that's okay. A nice detail. Go in, nice media area, great coffee, have a HomePod playing some music on a white table, no less, and just hang out with some people. Got to meet Renee Ritchie, Serenity Caldwell, Stephen Aquino, talked to Jason Snell, but I actually ran into him at the night before in the hotel randomly. I'm in the lobby talking to some of the 9to5 Mac guys, and Jason walks by, and hey, you know, it's kind of like random meeting somebody from the internet in the lobby of your hotel. But anyways, like, we're in the media section. After a while, they kind of take us into the auditorium. Really, really nice auditorium. What I've been told is Apple went in and upgraded all the sound and lighting in their auditorium. And I imagine they left all of that.
Nice.
And if they did, that is really, really awesome.
Yeah, the Apple equipment for that kind of thing is quite a show, isn't it?
Yeah, the projector was outstanding. I mean, the just the, all that was just top-notch. And really, the entire AV setup they did in that school was amazing. And I'm sure they left most of the things in the auditorium, and that's really cool. And if they did that, like, that's props to them, because obviously, like, that means a lot to the school. So, you know, went through the announcement, and we'll kind of cover the announcement, but afterwards went to these, like, you had a class schedule that you kind of went and you take you through some of the new apps and how to use them and et cetera, et cetera. One of the folks in my class was from Apple Insider, and then Matthew Panzerino from TechCrunch was in there. I got to meet him for the first time. Super nice guy. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I'll add about the actual event itself is running a live blog is exhausting. I mean, I am sweating by the end of it.
Yeah, that's
Well, and it's different because there was no stream. So if there's no stream, you're just kind of doing quick commentary.
Yeah.
But there's no live stream. And
you're trying to type just about every line that's spoken, yeah.
Well, and that's not even the hard part. It's you have to – I mean, we basically did it on a WordPress page. It's not like a chat software. So I'm having to constantly update a WordPress page. And, like, it takes a couple of seconds. And so you have to decide, like, when's a good time to save this? Like, so you can get something, but do you save it now? And then you miss possibly the next thing. The fastest way to get pictures in there really is to honestly, with your iPhone, tweet them and then copy the tweet link in there, and it pulls the image and the text. So, again, that was fun and exhausting, and I was glad it was over. It was very, very exhausting. So what do you think about the sixth generation iPad?
Well, you know the bind that I've been in, Bradley. Well, that's not a bind, it's putting it too strongly, but we've got the 9.7 iPad Pro, and we didn't provide anybody with an Apple Pencil, so some families have bought the kids an Apple Pencil. And I have just been sort of sitting here holding my breath going, I really hope by 2019 we're going to have a education-priced iPad that supports the Apple Pencil, because that would have been a problem if we had said, oh, we're refreshing to the 7th generation iPad. Oh, and sorry, it doesn't support that £100 stylus that you bought a few years ago. So, with one leap, I am free, right? That problem is nicely solved. But, I mean, I think one of the things, Bradley, about that iPad is it's all old parts. You know, it's okay, it's a bump on the low-cost thing, but everything on that is old. You know, it's not – nothing is bang up to date.
Well, it's old parts and the same price. And it's not that any of that is intrinsically wrong.
No.
But we're still using iPad Air 2s, and they're fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things about iPad right now is, and this is the first time in my experience, right, that the iPad, it's not been an absolute categorical imperative that you get the latest iPad to last you the next 3 years, right? When we started in 2010, it was, well, there was only one iPad then, but 2013, what did we have? We got the fourth generation iPad, the first one with the Lightning connector, and that was, there was, again, only that model, I think, at that time. And then when we had a choice when we came to do the iPad Pro in 2016, and we went with the iPad Pro because, you know, that was kind of at the time when the strategy was, you know, keep an old model around and sell it for just a fraction less than what the new one was worth. So it wasn't that much more to get the Pro, I don't remember. And the old one was like, I don't know what it was, like the iPad Air or something like that. So that was why we went iPad Pro then. But, you know, even we said it on the show back in the day, when the fifth generation iPad came out, you know, if I was refreshing today, that is the device we would be getting. So, I mean, it's nice that Apple Pencil support is in that model, but, you know, it's fine, but it's just fine, you know.
Yeah, the thing is, if you would have put this out as a press release, totally good. And again, if I'm buying iPads today, that's what we're buying. And again, this pricing is great, $300, mm-hmm. And especially if you buy it in bulk. I think it's actually $294 if you buy it like in a 10-pack.
Yeah,
and it's great. Like, I will buy those. You know, it's a lot cheaper than we paid for the iPad Air 2s a couple of years ago, and I'm happy for that. I guess my problem is a lower priced iPad with updated specs for that iPad, is that worth having the event? And is that your big story, I guess, hardware wise. And then again, it's not that there's nothing intrinsically wrong, but that's a very there's a football term called aim small, miss small, and I think that's to me very indicative of Apple's strategy here. Is they're not changing things drastically, so they're swinging small, aiming small, and if you miss small, you miss small.
Yeah.
And the iPad originally was a swing big kind of product, and it was changing a lot of things. It changed how apps were purchased, and it changed the entire education technology industry on its head. I mean,
Bradley, the thing about the iPad, you got to remember, is like people were scandalized by it. You know, it wasn't just the fact that it was the price that it was or anything like that, or it had the particular feature set, but even just like the idea of the software architecture, people were like genuinely offended by its existence. You know, the fact that you couldn't sideload apps, all that kind of stuff about the App Store, blah, blah, blah. Stuff that we don't really think about as controversial anymore. People were genuinely scandalized by it back in the day. And I remember, did I ever tell you a story about me being personally berated by Richard Stallman over the iPad? Did I tell you that story?
No.
This is a true story, actually. I'm glad we're back together just so I can finally tell this story. In Edinburgh, there's an event called the Turing Festival, and around about 2011 or 2012, they invited me to go and talk about the iPad program that we had done. And during this, during my talk, Richard Stallman, who was giving a talk either before or after, I can't remember, spent the whole time, the room was about, you know, half full or something like that. He spent the whole time in the very back row holding a meeting with like four or five of his acolytes in the back row at full speaking volume. And then as I wrapped up my talk, he just stood up at the back of the hall and like raised his two fists above his head and gave me like a two thumbs down gesture to my face. And then proceeded to come in the Q&A session, came up and basically went on a crazy rant about how the iBad, as he called it, was jailing children and I should be ashamed of myself. So that was my one interaction with the godfather of free software, and that was delightful. But, you know, people were scandalized by the iPad, and I think we've sort of forgotten a lot of the politics around it at the time as well.
So, you know, I think about where the iPad's at today, and I feel like there's a part of me that feels like the Mac is being progressed in a way to not crap on the iPad's parade and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're like, I'm not saying, I think it was on the recent Upgrade podcast, and said, do you think in 20 years, like, there are still iOS and macOS? It's like, no. Like, you know, 20 years from now, there clearly is not going to be, I don't think, independent OSs. Like, you know, at some point, things will probably merge. And it doesn't seem, it seems like they're almost like, you know, again, I'm fine keeping them as they are in some ways, but like maybe start to like one of them move really heavily in the other one. Like let's almost have like a skunkworks kind of thing. Like, you know, somebody build something that destroys both of them.
Yeah. Or even, you know, build a fork of iOS, which has a terminal and it has a desktop browser and, you know, it does everything macOS does. I mean, is that possible? I don't know. I mean, I think, see, one of the sort of undertone of the show, I thought, Bradley, was kind of like, it was confused, right? Because on the one hand, you've got something like, you've got Apple Classroom coming out for macOS, right? Which is, you're looking at that going, well, I understand why that's the case, because in a lot of schools, you've got teachers using Macs and students using iPads. But then they do something like classwork, where the idea there is maybe that both teachers and students are using iPad, because my understanding is that classwork is an iOS app. I'm not sure, but that's, so I'm kind of going, well, at the end of the day, I don't see there's certainly no game changer in this event, right? There's nothing that when you came out of the back end of that event, I think it's fair to say, you go, well, the world is different now that Apple has made any of these moves. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that was the sense that I got from anybody, and certainly nothing that you and I have talked about in the intervening time. Nobody's come out going, well, now Google are going to be worried, you know. And I think at the same time, there's no great strategy either, because there's like a bit of this and a bit of that, and there's a bit of this and a bit of that, but there's not like, okay, here's the actual plan. It was like, here's a laundry list of things we've done it for education. like now over to you schools to kind of make your pick and mix combination of all this stuff to whatever you want, you know. And to me, that was kind of like, come on, I need to see a vision here, you know.
Again, aim small, miss small. And I think that sums it up best for me. I mean, the crayon, like $49 Apple Pencil replacement, education only, you know, meaning you could only buy it as a school.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's fine. That's not change our school kind of of a device.
Yeah. But even at $49, you're not going to go and buy one for everybody in the school, right?
I think about, we're a small school, and I think about, gosh, how do I mean, like, they'll half of them be gone. Imagine if you're a school district with, like, 20,000 kids. Yeah. Like, no, how do you do that? And I know, they can't, in some ways, these products and services have to be built at scale. Like, how do they scale?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like these are all, like you said, a hodgepodge of various, like, services that, like, again, you've got the Apple Classroom app that's not on the Mac, but now you've got Classwork. You can't really use that on the Mac, so iPad only. Yeah. And
I guess
my point on all this stuff is, like, when I look at Classwork, beta's coming out in June. Like, what school is, like, pushing this heavily in August?
Yeah.
I mean, a beta is out in June.
Did you see Classwork working? Were there any working demos of it?
I did not see any.
No. And this is the weird thing about Classwork, right, is that there's so little actual detail about what that is. Do you know what I mean? Did that not strike you as weird? Like, I said, oh, we've got this thing for Classwork, and it does something with apps, and teachers can assign bits of an app, but then, like, where's the big story? You know, it doesn't seem to me like a strategy thing. I mean, to be honest with you, Bradley, from what I've seen of Classwork so far, and I think 9to5 had some leaked screenshots of it. It looks to me like what they've done is they've taken some of the features of iTunes U, like the assignment stuff in iTunes U, and they've made it look like Google Classroom. Because I bet there are Apple sales reps going into schools all over the states, and they're going, well, what's your equivalent of Google Classroom? And Apple are like, well, there's this iTunes U thing where you have to have a public site and manage the Apple IDs, and then you've got to create a course inside. And people are going, I don't want to create a course, I just want to send out an assignment, you know? And I think that sort of tells you the extent to which Google are sort of driving the agenda, at least in American education, because it is quite clear to me from what I've seen of Classwork that it's functionality that mostly already exists made to look exactly like Google Classroom so that teachers can sort of get a grip of what the Apple stack is like.
And I guess, you know, I go back to this is really a problem with Google Classroom as well. It's like, you know, if I have a kid in kindergarten, I have to maintain their data until they leave.
Hmm.
I mean, year over year grades, year over year report cards, all that, year over year attendance. How are, honestly, any of these tools helping me with that? I mean, Google Classroom helps slightly, but, like, I mean, like, that's the thing about Apple's things is, like, you can use this. And I honestly think, I know IT people don't rule the world, but IT people, like, I know in our school, like, nothing's getting pushed out school-wide unless I drive it. Okay,
yeah.
So I feel like a lot of these announcements were, like, aimed at, like, the super savvy teacher, mm-hmm. like,
or the enthusiast, like, teacher,
right? It's like the latest and greatest things, and it's like, okay, so you're built. It's to me, it's like you're wanting to change the fitness world, but then you build tools that only you build, you know, devices and tools that only, like, the people that are already fitness experts can use.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, you think about a fat guy like me trying to start going to the gym, like, you go and buy some sports clothes, but you can only buy sports clothes up to size extra large, you know. You're like, if you want fat people to go to the gym, you got to make 4XL gym clothes, am I right? You know, and that's it's kind of like this for Apple products as well. It's sort of like the people who are already convinced are convinced, you know, but there's a difference between tactics and strategy, right? That all of these things seem highly tactical, right? The Apple could say, well, okay, here's Apple Teacher, here's Apple Classroom, here's Classwork, here's a crayon, here's an iPad that supports the pencil, here's, you know, a little bit more iCloud storage. And they're all just sort of short-term patches on this general strategy that is clearly not working that well. But there's no sort of long-term, we intend for all iPad schools to move entirely to Apple, a whole Apple stack, and that's something that, you know, I don't know if they actually have the vision to do that, but it would be nice if they just said they didn't, and then we could just get on with it and say, well, okay, you know, it's going to be, it's the G Suite backend forever, and then we can we can decide on the platform afterwards. But that puts Apple at great risk.
Well, and the G Suite's interesting because after the event, there was a leaked page on the IT resources page for the Australian Apple website that mentioned coming next winter is
G Suite for us.
And G Suite and Microsoft Azure Active Directory Sync. And so, like, it's like clearly, I guess, is that this year? I mean, I think in like this year or next year, I'm assuming next year, right?
Well, winter for Australians would be summer 2018 but that text A only appeared on the Australia New Zealand Apple School Manager page, and then B, it went away as soon as somebody tweeted that it was there. So I don't know what's going on with that, but you know, I think one of the reasons why I think that's happening, some Australians were tweeting me about that. They're saying that, well, there's no real MIS support for anything that's used in Australian schools, so it's got to be that. So
yeah, it's not America either. There's four. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I'm going under the assumption that that was real and that's going worldwide. That's my assumption at this point.
I would certainly hope
so. Yeah, and so, yeah. But my problem is like they're punting identity management to one of their competitors that in the announcement they talked about their privacy with how they manage the classwork data. And again, I say, we have, if you read the Google K-12 like security stuff, like it's very different accounts. Like there's no ads, they don't mine our data.
Yeah.
It's very different. Okay, so knowing that, but they still make that lip service against clearly Google.
Yeah.
So how can you say that and then punt identity management, and punting is a football term meaning give the ball to the other team, to one of your competitors who you're kind of calling out their privacy model. I just know that doesn't like that. That seems lazy. It seems like we don't want to do it, and everybody's already using Google, so let's just do that. And this feels very un-Apple-like to say, we don't do that. No, like imagine if they had done that, like with iCloud. So everybody's already using Outlook and Gmail. So we're not going to do our own thing. No, you do your own thing. Like that's part of the experience.
I mean, if you look at iOS 11, that's exactly what they tried to do with files. They tried to completely punt on that whole storage back end by saying, well, let's build files and build plugins for every cloud platform. And now you just go and choose whatever cloud platform you want. So, and this is kind of the same thing with Apple that they have with, Facebook being one of the top apps in the App Store. Well, if Apple really thinks Facebook's privacy policy is that bad, surely Apple should kick them out of the App Store. But Apple won't do that. And surely if Apple thinks Google's privacy stance is so bad, Apple should build a full back-end competitor to it so that people don't have to be pushed to these bad actors. But this is the kind of... Apple are playing both sides of this privacy story because they're refusing to build equivalent services and calling it a privacy stance. Whereas if Apple actually built a full competitor to G Suite, they would have to do essentially the same things that Google does. But the fact that Apple can afford not to do that or chooses not to do that means that they can play this privacy card all the time. But I completely agree with you that I think it's hypocritical is a strong word, but it really feels a bit like that, where you're looking at Apple going, well, if you think it's terrible that schools go G Suite, you got to give us a privacy respecting equivalent. And I think people who have a really strong view on privacy, probably stronger view than the actual reality warrants, they should be the maddest people at Apple. I mean, Apple, there's a company whose business model doesn't depend on data analysis, who have got all the money in the world, who refuse to build you a service that you need because reasons, right? For unspecified reasons. I mean, they could do it, but they refuse to do it. And people should be mad at Apple for not doing that, because that drives every school into the arms of either Microsoft or Google to get the back end up and running for their school.
So there was also iWork pencil support.
Nice.
I'm just not. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. I'm not interested in iWork as an ecosystem at this point.
No.
I think it goes back to the high level. That's fine. That's an app. That's not an ecosystem for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, right? I have just switched from Keynote to Google Slides. and you can go back in our archive and you can see the there's actually a whole episode called Google Slides Does Not Exist. Do you remember we did that show?
Oh, yeah.
And where we absolutely dumped on Google Slides. But I'm here to tell you, Bradley, it is better. It's not as beautiful as Keynote. but it is every bit as functional, and it can do stuff that Keynote just cannot do, right? So let me just give you some examples of stuff I've done in the past couple of weeks, right? Making presentations where, like, with one click inside the actual presentation file, you can embed a YouTube video right in the slide. I mean, you know what it takes to do that on iOS, to get a YouTube video into a Keynote presentation? It's not easy at all. But you can do that directly in Google Slides. They've got the live Q&A thing. I've been using this intensely with my classes recently, where what it does is you start a Q&A session and it puts a banner on your slide that says, you know, ask a question at, and then gives a Google URL. And the kids can go in there and they can type a question and it pops up in your presenter display and you can tap it and put the question up on the screen and answer it. And, you know, that has unlocked a whole array of questions and interaction in my classes that hasn't been there before. And that kind of stuff is a really big deal, you know. And just none of that is happening in iWork, you know. I'm just making nice documents.
Yeah, it's not that Keynote is not better. It's not good enough to overcome its challenges, you know, inside of its ecosystem. And it's still presentation software. Where Google Slides has evolved into more of a interactive presentation software. Well, I guess or solution.
Slides is part of an ecosystem, right? And isn't it weird that we're talking about this? You know, I've got that system where kids can log into a Q&A session with the same identity that they use to log into Apple Classroom, to Google Classroom, with the same identity they use to log into Google Drive and Google Docs and their email. And it's the thing that I'm finding now when Google roll out new services is that it's just all ready to go because they own the back end. Whereas with iCloud and Managed Apple ID, everything's a hassle. And I think that's part of the conversation as well, you know. But bigger than that, if you look at the iWork Pencil support, I mean, it's a cute trick, right, to be able to attach annotations, like virtual ink annotations, to individual character points in the document. But is that better than modern collaboration workflows that we have in Google Drive? I mean, if I was working on, say, a policy document with two other teachers in my school, would I want us to be sending around copies of a Pages document and then I'm scribbling on it with a pencil? Or would I rather have a folder or a team drive that we work on and we use comments in the Google Doc and we mention each other's email addresses in the comment and we get assigned those tasks and there's like an actual workflow there and it's modern and it's connected and it's all part of one thing, as opposed to this kind of, you know, 1990s, 2000s idea of the individual document going around? And that's the kind of thing that Classwork needs to answer if it's going to do anything. It's got to answer, like, how does that document actually get from the student to the teacher without making a copy, right? And this is the thing, you know, even with iTunes U, we're still making copies of documents and putting them in the cloud and downloading them and sending them back annotated and things like that. And to me, that's the kind of, it's that high-level student-teacher collaboration workflow that's really missing in the Apple world. It's not just, you know, the fact that we can scribble on a virtual piece of paper with a virtual pencil and virtual red ink just seems like such an old-fashioned idea. You know, I'm like, have we not invented anything better than that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's whenever you get around to reading Ready Player One, I think, yeah, it'll make sense.
I must get that book.
So next up, 200 gig iCloud storage. That's great.
Can we say finally?
Finally, I mean that's great. Like, we've been asking for that. Still no way to buy more, but that's a lot. But as you said in the notes, Google is still unlimited.
Yeah. So when you go into that meeting with the director of education, Apple says 200 gigs for free, and Google says infinite for free, and that's a big thumb on the scales for Google as well. I mean, you know, now that it's more than five, maybe that number can go up again. Maybe Apple just keeps kicking the can down the road all the time, you know, every time it gets close to an issue. But, I hope we don't need to wait 7 or 8 years for another really slight bump in that. Because 200 gigs is 200 gigs, but if you are going to be on the same Apple ID for 13 or 14 years of education, then 200 gigs isn't going to go away forever. But I suppose what it does do is it lets us turn on something like... it lets us turn on, you know, optimizing iPad storage in Apple Photos now, and that'll save us a wee bit of trouble with local storage on iPad as well.
So, what wasn't announced You know, one of the things that was it was interesting was there was nothing about iBooks Author other than on the iPad it's coming into Pages, like sort of
some of it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, iBooks Author. I mean, there are certainly some schools that have gone heavily into it. I mean, there are. I know of some schools where they've actually hired like iBooks Author developers almost to make books for them. And some I've met people at universities and colleges in the US who have they've gone heavily with iBooks Author, they're essentially making their own textbooks. But that's not something that every school is going to do. That's really something, you know. I mean, one of the narratives in the media about this whole event was this is fine for rich schools. And I think employing people to write textbooks for you is really fine for rich schools. But I don't know that iBooks Author has really done what it needed to do.
Well, you know, I'll in my recap article for 9 to 5 Mac, which I'll list in the show notes, I looked back at that 2012 event, and I kind of came to the conclusion nothing they announced really mattered. iBooks Author is fine. And again, there's occasional schools that are making good use of it. David Sparks, I would say, is the most prolific user, and he's actually selling books that are very interactive. And there's just a part of me that you hear about the textbook strategy, and there's just a part of me that thinks, gosh, and again, don't are there antitrust things that have to be worked through? Sure. But like looking back, Apple should have just bought a textbook publisher and said, all right, you get your books for free on iPad. I don't know. I mean, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like swing big.
Yeah.
And then going back to 2012 and looking at, 2012 and then 2018, it's still swing small, miss small. And, you know, swing small, get a small win. Again, the crayon, it's a small win, not a big win. No. Doesn't change. It's not a game changer. Also, really, no update on iTunes U. And again, so like, how does Classwork and iTunes U like work together?
iTunes U remains a product in our lineup.
That's what I was told. Yeah. And it's like, what are schools supposed to do? Like, what's the story here? There is no story. There's no centralized story where they say, hey, you're an Apple school, go all in with us. And that's been my thing I've repeated over and over. You want me to go all in with Apple? Give me the tools to do that. Because there are still so many things that are missing from their – it's not the hardware. It's the services stack that's missing. It has nothing to do with hardware. They could still be selling the iPad Air 2 to schools, and it would be fine.
Yeah. I mean, if Apple built an equivalent to G Suite – and we're still selling the iPad Air 2 to schools, that would be a much better story than here's the latest possible iPad. You know, even if the iPad Pro was education priced, you know, an iPad Pro with the existing Apple Cloud stack, not as good, you know. And I think that was, you know, if we want to just segue into talking a little bit about the media reaction to the event, Bradley, I think this is one of the things that almost everybody in the press missed about this event. They were still looking at it as, here's an iPad as a piece of hardware, here's a Chromebook as a piece of hardware, and look at how the iPad is more expensive than the Chromebook. And as if that was the basic problem, right? That's not the problem at all. The problem is Google's cloud services are better than Apple's cloud services. Chromebook works better with G Suite. iPad is a great device, but it has this kind of handicap, if you like, which is the cloud services that come along with it. And also the fact that the G Suite stuff doesn't work that well on iOS through their apps either. And that's where that's the problem. It's not the problem that the iPad costs a little bit more. It's that it costs more and it doesn't do as much. That's it.
Well, and again, it's our argument is not Chromebook versus iPad. This is G Suite versus iCloud. And iCloud just didn't show up to the game. I mean, they don't have a comparable product. I mean, again, I have some thoughts about should Apple buy Jamf or should they roll their own thing and include it for free? Sure, I have thoughts on that. But you know, Google's Chromebook management isn't free. It comes $30 management fee.
It's about the same as what you pay for 3 years of Jamf as a school. Yeah.
Right. It's not nothing, but I think what a lot of people see is they see the $200 Chromebook with a $30 management fee. So you're looking at $230 versus a $299 iPad with the Jamf fee on top of that. And then getting started with Jamf. And again, Jamf is good. And then, you know, the Chromebook management is fine.
Yeah.
It's neither, that's not the issue. you know, I think the Chromebook deployment strategy is a little simpler to explain to people. Mm-hmm. But once you get into the actual nitty gritty of the Chromebook versus iPad management ongoing, they're fine. They're both fine. They work. I had some major issues with Jamf here recently, but that was like just a weird bug. But they're both fine. They're both fine.
Yeah, I think what it is, Bradley, is that people in the press are looking at that and they're saying, oh, Google has a Chromebook management device as part of the G Suite management system. Apple doesn't have a MDM-type service that they give to schools. Therefore, Chromebook is easier to manage, right? Now, okay, you could make a case to say, well, dealing with a third party versus dealing with the first party vendor, maybe that's a thing. But at the same time, you could also say, well, you know, if I'm managing Macs and Windows machines and, you know, other devices, I have to have then a different system to manage Chromebooks. You know, nobody ever comes up with that point and says, oh, Chromebooks are hard to manage because you've got to use Google's tool as opposed to using the one you're already using. Do you see what I mean? Like, you can make that argument both ways. And I think people really missed a trick to give the full detail on the Chrome OS management story because they sort of said Chromebooks are easier to manage. And they just took that assumption, didn't really question it or verify it. Because if you think about it, right, if you want to have an easy time deploying Chromebook, you've got to have your whole back end on G Suite first. And if you don't have that, then managing Chromebook is, you know, a non-trivial transition that you have to make. So, you know, I think you have to compare like for like there too. But I don't want to make the case that, you know, oh, if you actually count everything, iPad is cheaper than Chromebook. I'm not actually sure I'm buying that. I think, you know, for a school, a ruggedized, simple Chromebook, sure, you can get it for cheaper than the iPad. But the problem is not just that iPad costs more, but it also does, in some ways, does less, you know, out of the box without any additionals. And sure, you can hit the App Store and you can download hundreds of apps for the iPad. That's a great thing. But it's a great thing at a certain level of education. And at a higher level of education, I think it becomes, it's not a liability, but it is not the benefit that it is at sort of K through 5. Does that seem a fair point to make?
100% agree. I think that's the App Store is still Apple's secret sauce here. They do have a lot more focused content available and a lot more focused apps. And that you know, in the Chrome Web Store, there's not that stuff.
Yeah.
But again, as you get older, you become less and less reliant on those apps that are doing specific things to reinforce specific things.
Yeah.
When they get into 11th grade, they're using computers like you and I use computers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, again, like I felt like on a whole, this event was a cheerleading session for the people that already love iPad and think it's the be all end all school device without understanding like its major overarching flaws. Not at the necessarily at the iOS level, but there's still issues there. But more at the high level, how do we like scale these services and link this with our existing school workflows for grading and for parent communication and things of that nature?
You've said it. You know, I think there's also been a kind of, particularly maybe in the American media, is this fair to say? I don't know. But the idea that schools can't afford iPads, right? Now, I know there are schools can't afford iPads. There are schools can't afford Chromebooks. There are schools can't afford anything at all. But the general lack of a critique of that fact has been very disturbing to me. You know, if you look, I mean, am I right that America is the richest country in the world? You know, I mean, what's the economy in America? Trillions of dollars a year? What's the federal budget? You know, $4 trillion, something like that. You know, multiply the cost of any computer you want by the number of students in America, and that doesn't even become 5% of that budget. You know, we could afford, every developed country in the world can afford to buy, you know, a computer, a bike, a trumpet for every student, and it wouldn't make any difference to anybody's budget. And the fact that schools can't afford computers is a political choice. It's not a fact of nature. And I think the fact that people didn't really pull that fact up, you know, that was disappointing to me.
Well, and I think if the pricing model was reversed and you could get, say, a really old, you know, kind of a really, maybe let's say the iPad Air 2. Mm-hmm. Let's say you can get the iPad Air 2 for, you know, $229, $199.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you can get a really good Chromebook for $300.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chromebooks have done would have done just as well, because I don't think it was necessarily the cheap price that sold them. I think it was the price plus the integration into existing workflows and end-to-end deployment and kind of hook in with their identity system.
Yeah.
I think that's what's sold them. It's not just price. It's price plus all the other things.
Yeah, because you've got to factor in the sort of staff cost and the transition cost of getting to know how to do iOS management, right? And building up that stack of support. Whereas if you're already a G Suite school, you know, Google's pushing it an open door to get you to buy a Chromebook because they can correctly and truly, genuinely make the case that, look, you've got the whole back end, all you need to do is enroll these in your domain and just give them to people and you're finished. And I know a lot of admins who would look at that and go, that sounds really good. You know, I might actually be one of them sometimes. Whereas Apple, you know, you're talking about a new platform. And I don't think that managing iOS is all that hard, but it's different, you know, and there's a cost to that as well. And that is what it is, you know. So I just think Apple are conceding informally or perhaps even semi-formally, conceding that back end to other competitors. And that puts iOS at an existential risk in schools. Because if Google just pull the plug one day on iOS apps, or, you know, they find that they don't become a priority, or I think they haven't been a priority for a few years, and, you know, suddenly iOS is in a lot of trouble.
Well, I think it puts iOS into the IT stack where Apple was, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, mm-hmm. where everybody's hooked into Windows and like the Apple laptops are like, we got to figure out how to make those work with our existing stuff.
Yeah.
I think that it puts iOS there. Well, oh gosh, we're hooked into G Suite or Microsoft for everything. I guess we got to figure out how to make these few iPads work with our ecosystem. It's a second class citizen in the stack.
Yeah, there was an opportunity there, I think, in the past first five years of iOS to make iOS like, this is the dominant stack and everybody's got to play this game. But I don't think that has happened. And I think, in fact, because Apple hasn't delivered the cloud storage side of things, because they haven't delivered the collaboration suite, or they delivered it late and incomplete as it even is today, I think that's where the opportunity has come for Google. Google have competed hard, but they competed hard on the other end. And Apple maybe didn't notice or didn't react quickly enough. To the point where, you know, schools have transitioned to G Suite and are rapidly transitioning to either G Suite or sticking with Microsoft but going to the Active Directory, the Azure cloud. And, you know, even if Apple came out today with a G Suite equivalent, would you switch to it?
I would consider it. I think I would certainly, if it was like aimed at just getting your students on board, I would consider it. But I don't think that they can not do it because some schools might not switch. They don't go. When has Apple done that with any product? Like, go into it knowing you're better,
yeah,
and make it better.
Yeah, we can hope.
So overall, like, again, event great. Like, it was a great atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Every Apple employee there was super, super nice. It was a first class event, and it's not like I would be down on anything. Like, they're all good products, but it was trying to think of the good analogy. It's like, you got an injury and like the medicine you take doesn't, I don't know, like you got like a stunt, you know, you've got strep throat and you're taking medicine for allergies.
Mm.
And I felt like this iPad was like the medicine for the wrong problem.
Yeah. They're still playing the exact same game they were playing before, aren't they?
Right.
You know, and I think the conversation's moved on. You know, I think what we're looking for now in a high tech school is you're looking at high level, teacher to teacher, teacher student, and teacher student parent workflows. And I think what you're seeing from Google is they're aggressively attacking all of those workflows. You look at things like team drives, which are killer, absolutely killer for, you know, school management. You look at Google Classroom and you look at the features where they've got things like they've got Guardian emails, where like a student can be connected with somebody else's email address and that person can be sent automatic summaries of work that's due in, work that was missed, work that was completed, scores, all that kind of stuff. You know, that kind of thing. I'm looking at that going, oh man, that would take out a whole round of effort that we have to do in our school if we just enabled that feature and switched to Google Classroom. You know, so those high-level workflows, Apple doesn't have any of them. And to say it's because privacy is really just not good enough.
Yeah, you know, I think I'll leave my last thoughts as Apple is swinging small again, they're winning small, and they're missing small.
Yeah.
And they're not rocking the boat. They have their story, and they dug their heels on it.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And, you know, that might work, but it hasn't worked up till now. And, you know, I kind of feel like they needed to change the game a little bit, and they did not come up with that, you know. So we'll see how it plays, but I think... I just feel, you know, the reason I wanted to kind of talk to you, Bradley, and record this was because I just felt so disappointed by the media reaction that so many people just kind of missed the point of what the actual question was. And it wasn't just about, you know, Chromebooks easier to admin, because it's not really. But what they really mean is it's easier to share, and Google has a first-party admin interface for it. But at the same time, people were still looking at it as a box of iPad versus a box of Chromebook. Which one is cheaper? Therefore, schools are going to win. But I think that does a disservice to schools as well. Like, the schools who've chosen G Suite have chosen it for a very good reason, which is that those high-level workflows are very well supported there, where they're not with the Apple product. And, you know, I just worry a little bit that Apple are maybe not hearing the voices they need to hear in terms of the reasons why people are choosing not to go with Apple. And to me, that's kind of where we sit at this time in history.
Well, hopefully next year or sometime soon, we can get back together and talk about finally have the solutions.
Fingers crossed.
So we'll leave it there this week. Cool. And we'll have to title this as a nod to our friends at the Accidental Tech Podcast. We'll call it Accidental Education Podcast because we didn't mean to do a show. We just called and both of us happened to hit record. So episode 241 of Out of School. That's
bonus content. Talk to you again.
Bye.